Know what time it is, Anastasia?
Tom, are those sleigh bells?
Yes, they are, and it's time for making that list and checking it twice, so to speak. But I'm not talking about a Christmas list.
Are you talking about our top 10 classical albums of the year list?
Yes, that would be it.
Yeah, because we have definitely checked that more than once. We've done it more than twice. We've agonized and we've argued over it.
Yes, we certainly have.
Who's the we?
The we is me, Tom Huizinga.
And me, Anastasia Tsoulikas. And we actually have put together a list of pretty awesome albums already about halfway through the year. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah, I remember those. In fact, many of them are returning as the year's best albums, like the Bach St. Matthew Passion DVD with the Berlin Philharmonic and a staggeringly moving version, Semi-Stage by Peter Sellers.
And then there was that fearless pianist, Jeremy Denk, who put Beethoven together with Ligeti.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking of Beethoven, don't forget about Brooklyn Riders' fresh take on the Opus 131 string quartet by Beethoven.
Right, that piece that is just everywhere right now. And I can't forget about the San Francisco Symphony and Michael Tilson Thomas conducting them, and they put out a terrific album of music by John Adams.
Oh, yeah. Those are some darn good records from our mid-year list.
And not only were they on our mid-year list, they've made it to our end-of-year top 10, and now we have some more to add.
So let's get right to it and start off with this. That is mezzo-soprano Cecilia Bartoli, and she's got this, what should we call it, a musical archaeological habit. She likes researching and digging up these old, forgotten composers and totally immersing herself in the music, releasing these very handsome album packages. And we've got another one. Earlier this year, she released Mission, music from the somewhat mysterious Agostino Stefani.
With one of our crazy packages to go with it.
And another crazy photo on the cover.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Okay, if you haven't seen the cover to this is great. She is bald-headed, and she's dressed as a priest, and she's like brandishing this cross. She's sticking it out kind of like in your face. And
yes.
It's,
I have to say, our engineer is actually doing a dramatic reenactment of the cover as we're talking.
You know, I give her credit, though, for not, you know, picking these glamorous photos. I mean, she is a very handsome woman, and she, you know, she could just have another really great photo shoot on the cover, but instead, she's bald, and she looks like she's half crazy. But the music on the record is really quite something. Stefani was barely a footnote in music history until Cecilia Bartoli bit right into him.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about who he was, though.
Well, he was a priest himself, and that's probably why Bartoli is dressed as a priest in the cover. He was also a diplomat. He was a political operative. He was born in Italy, but spent most of his life in the German-speaking lands. And the music kind of straddles the end of the Renaissance, beginning of the Baroque era. Bartoli thinks of him as some kind of missing link between Monteverdi and the high Baroque masters like Handel. And the music can be virtuosic, especially when Bartoli performs it.
Thank you.
di te, facile cara, facile. Splendida di te, facile cara, facile cara, facile. Quella che porno, quella si è splendida, quella si è splendida.
This is her real sweet spot when it comes to a time frame.
She excels at this very florid music, like we've just heard. But she also, I think, excels, and there are many places on the record, where it shows that she can melt, you know, even the hardest of hearts with this very beautiful, limpid singing. And here's a good spot. Listen to Bartoli, accompanied by just a single theorbo, a kind of giant lute. And she's just pouring all the passion and color into a single word, amami, which is Italian for love me.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
The breath control
is just amazing. And that was Cecilia Bartoli from her new album, Mission. Well, speaking of voices, there's a really interesting dynamic in play in one of the other records we've selected, which is by a cellist named Maya Beiser, and it's a collaboration with the composer Michael Harrison, and it's called Time Loops. It's one of these situations in which Beiser has exponentially increased her presence, shall we say, by making use of a whole bunch of loops of herself. Just fallen head over heels for the opening piece on the album called Just Ancient Loops, which sort of courses over three movements. Harrison was a student of Terry Riley's and also of Pandit Pranand, who's a great North Indian classical vocalist, and Ustad Mashhoor Ali Khan. And you get that sort of American ecstatic thing going like you do in really great Terry Riley music.
Yeah, the piece is set up in three movements, and it does have all these influences, but there's yet kind of an old-fashioned Baroque influence to it as well, in that it's set up fast, slow, fast.
Super traditional.
Right. Yeah. It starts with this drone, it builds, the second movement slow, kind of a chorale of sorts, and then the final movement, you mentioned that minimalist influence, and there really is kind of a John Adams shaker loop groove going on there, and then that builds nicely. Let's listen as it kind of evaporates into this pizzicato, and that in itself begins rebuilding. Thank you. that's Maya Beiser, and she's an adventurous young cellist, kind of pushing the instrument into a few genre-blurring directions, I would say.
Yeah, and that was all Maya Beiser, we should say.
Right, loop upon loop. And it sounds just terrific. The record is called Time Loops. But, you know, there's more on the record than just music of Michael Harrison. There's Arvo Pärt.
There's that arrangement of one of those chestnuts of classical music.
The Ave Maria, the Bach Gounod Ave Maria.
Yeah, and it's kind of striking to hear that in this very different setting.
Well, you know, we ended up having another cellist on our list, too.
Yeah, it was a really good year for cello.
I guess so. The MacArthur Genius Grant winner from last year, Lisa Weilerstein.
There's some crazy, crazy timing with this album. It is a recording of the Elgar Cello Concerto, and that was supposed to be the big news of this album because she recorded it with Daniel Barenboim, who's the conductor, and Barenboim was married to perhaps the cellist above all others who is associated with the Elgar Cello Concerto, Jacqueline Dupre. So for him to record it now with another young female cellist, especially, not to typecast, but, you know, there are certain parallels perhaps at play, it was very big news, and that was what the record label was really putting forward as the story. But the other big piece on this album was the Elliot Carter Cello Concerto, and Elliot Carter passed away very shortly after this album was released, and somehow it became a testament to this incredible work of his, and especially considering his age, he was well over 100 when he died. It sort of became a great testament to what he was producing late in his career. To hear the Elgar next to the Carter, for me, opened up both of those works in a really interesting way. You don't think of them as being parallel in form or in flavor, but there was some real resonance there that I loved.
You know, it's serendipitous, I guess, that a lot of people probably now are digging into the Elliot Carter Concerto. Mm-hmm. Because this record came out just at the right time, so to speak.
If you look at it just for the Elgar, in this piece, in this recording of the Elgar, I hear such like an old soul quality to her playing. It's not necessarily one that you would expect of someone who is, I think, just now barely 30, but it's definitely there.
She does bring a very rich sound to music that is, you know, very, very rich itself. Elgar, during World War I, he stopped composing music, basically, but then, you know, after the war, he wrote this cello concerto, which is kind of like a requiem, in a way. Probably his most searching, his most austere, lean.
And
there's some anger in it.
And it's not, but I want to say, though, she's not like she's sort of drowning in self-pity or in histrionics here.
No. And it turned out to be actually Elgar's last, you know, real big composition.
Thank you.
think of Maya Beiser as an adventuresome cellist, but Weilerstein really is too. We took her to the Baltimore Aquarium and set her next to a tank of stingrays, and she played Bach cello suites for an audience of animal lovers there at the aquarium, which was quite something.
Yeah, and do you remember how you and I first met, where we first met, and the context for that?
That's right. She was at the White House playing for the Classical Music Day at the White House.
Yeah, and so it was the Obama family, President and Mrs. and the kids and Grandma, and a bunch of, you know, VIPs and a few scruffy journalist types like us in the back. And but one of the pieces she played was actually Osvaldo Golijov's music. And she brought Kodály, remember?
That's
she brought
right.
part of the sonata.
She basically brought this kind of, in a way, this head-banging solo cello music to the White House. And I think everyone was just a little bit blown away by it.
But it was awesome.
It was gutsy, and it was great. It was, I think, the best music that was played there that day.
Yeah, I think so, too. But that's the kind of personality she is. And that's a very, very good thing.
There's another thread between the music that we want to listen to a little bit of next, Benjamin Britten's War Requiem. And the thing about Elgar was Elgar's cello concerto was a response to World War I, and this music was a response to World War II. Is a piece for soprano, tenor, baritone, soloist, plus chorus and orchestra, premiered in 1962. And the idea was to mark the reopening of Coventry Cathedral, which was destroyed in the war. And, of course, Britten was a pacifist, so he was asked to write a piece of music, and this is what he came up with.
The piece is this incredibly resonant and stirring and moving thing. It's the setting of a requiem, but it's interspersed with poetry by Wilfred Owen, who actually was a soldier himself in World War I, and he was killed in action by a sniper. You know, it's one of those things that you just can't imagine happening. He was killed just a week before the war ended, and he wrote this amazing, gorgeous poetry. And it has such a life in this music.
Yeah, you know, this recording is really, I think, quite a dramatic reading of it. The quiet parts are very quiet. I mean, from the very beginning and certain parts of the Kyrie, I mean, you can hardly hear this very hushed sound. And then the louder points are really nice and loud, and they kick. I mean, I think it was Britten himself who said he kind of had Verdi's Requiem in his head when he was writing some of this, and it has this kind of, you know, big brash sound to it at points, like in the Dies Irae. Some of the War Requiem by Benjamin Britten in a recent recording by the London Symphony Orchestra, and that's that's some fierce music there.
Yes, but it's also a recording of tremendous quiet beauty, which is one of the gifts in it. There's this incredible duet between two of the soloists. The duet is So Abram Rose, and the two soloists are tenor Ian Bostridge and the bass Simon Keenlysad, and there's such incredible sweetness and tenderness and sorrow in this.
Thy hand upon the lad, neither do
And so we heard the London Symphony Orchestra and chorus, along with the choir of Eltham College, and Gian Andrea Nozzetto was the conductor, along with the soloist Ian Bostridge and Simon Keenly Sutt. And it's just a tremendous document, this recording. So, Tom, what should we listen to next?
I think we should listen to this Esa-Pekka Salonen record that came out earlier. I love it when a new piece of music has the power to just pull you in from its very first bars. That's Esa-Pekka Salonen's violin concerto, performed, I think, just to perfection by its dedicatee, Leila Josefowicz. And I love that opening with its little darting violin figures and its glowing vibraphone. And it kind of sets an agitated tone for a violin that is nearly in constant motion in this piece. It's just called Violin Concerto, and it's the main piece on this record, composed by Esa-Pekka Salonen, who, I think, Anastasia, people probably know him better as a conductor than a composer.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he was at the Los Angeles Philharmonic for such a long time.
17 years.
And that was actually one of the reasons when he left. He said he needed to spend more time composing. He couldn't really balance his life as a composer and his life as a conductor. And if this is the kind of music he's putting out now, I mean, that's a wonderful reason to step off the podium.
No lie. I think it's a very eclectic sound world. It brims with all these transparent colors and shifting rhythms. And in the third movement, I mean, hey, we even get like arena rock style drumming. I know this is probably no doubt the first concerto to feature a duet between violin and hi-hat.
There's this incredible, like, silvery color that he uses in this piece. And I think that moment that you're talking about is such a great example of that.
Well, I think that he's certainly paying homage to a certain degree to his heroes, you know, Lutosławski, Debussy, Stravinsky, maybe even Dutilleux. But, I mean, the music, I think, is really very much his own. The beautiful final movement of the concerto was called Adieu, with these mysterious chords, long lyrical violin lines. And like you mentioned earlier, he spent all those years at the LA Philharmonic, and this piece was premiered in one of his last concerts that he gave with that orchestra. It's a little bit of the final movement from the violin concerto of Esa-Pekka Salonen with Leila Josefowicz, who actually helped him out a little bit composing it, and she just plays the heck out of it. Sounds really great.
And he's conducting.
Not the LA Philharmonic, but he is conducting the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra on this disc. A really good one, one of our favorites.
And speaking of Scandinavian music, there's one other album that you really fell head over heels for.
Yes, I definitely fell for the CD. It's Danish composer Von Holmboe's Chamber Symphonies. And, you know, back in 1996 when he died, he was 86. And I think it's safe to say, don't you, that his music was practically unknown in this country.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, there were a few adventuresome listeners, myself included, who followed that series, remember, on the BIS label of Hombo Symphony Recordings and in the mid-1990s. And I think that following that music, we got to know a really fascinating artist who has incredible integrity and incredible compositional chops.
Well, who knew that Lapland had such a good ensemble, the Lapland Chamber Orchestra, playing the chamber symphonies of von Hombo?
John Storgard's conducting there, and yes, they are a very agile little group there, I must say. You know, Hombo's music, probably not everyone's cup of tea, but I just love listening to these chamber symphonies. They're so well constructed. And I think you can think of these in terms of like sleek, mid-century modern Danish furniture. I mean, there's these deceptively simple, even glamorous lines, but it's smooth, it's a little aloof, very sturdy, though. Very sturdy.
I'm glad you said Danish modern instead of, like, IKEA.
No, they're built so well. So this is a disc that probably not on everybody's radar, but it is just well-crafted music and really, really well-performed.
Beautiful. Well, I'm so glad, because I have to be honest, that was one that I didn't spend a ton of time with when I first heard it, and you really convinced me to come back to it, so thank you.
Ah, good. And, you know, you can hear more if you just scroll down on the page, and we've got a little bit longer excerpts from some of the music that we've been talking about from this top 10 list. And the other items on our top 10 list, we talked about mid-year, and
honestly, I think it would have been much, much easier this year in particular if we had had the task of choosing a top 20. Top 10 was a little tough this year.
It was tough. But okay, so now we got our work cut out for next week.
Yeah.
We can argue over another top 10.
Sounds good.
Okay.